Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk New York sports here. The Fan.
All right, 3:05, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Got you for another 2 hours, 3 hours deep into our five-hour midnight ride, taking you to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show, 888-808-1019. We'll get to a couple other things, just really, you know, Deion Sanders kind of talking and poo-pooing the idea and dismissing the idea that he said, hopefully the Giants, that he's open to his son going anywhere, Cleveland, New Orleans, it doesn't matter. And it is going to be interesting because you keep hearing that maybe he's falling and he's had to deal with, obviously. He also talked about the idea that there was those rumors about him being bad in the room and some teams being turned off by him. He said he knew who that was and he went and talked to the coach or whatever. But I really don't think Deion Sanders is going to bring a circus. I really don't. And I'm sure he's going to be okay with wherever his son goes. But I know people are concerned about that. To me, I don't think he should fall past three. I'm still on the boat that they should take Shedeur Sanders, the New York Giants, with the third pick. We can get into that a little bit. Maybe we will. 888-808-1019. I also think, you know, we saw something that's clearly going to be what we see a lot of this year, where with a lead late in the game, the Yankees went to their best defensive alignment. And they took out Jason Dominguez and left and put in Grisham in center and moved Cody Bellinger to left field. I think that is something, obviously, at least now while he's still, you know, becoming accustomed to third base, left field rather. I think we're going to see that a lot. And that's why, you know, he's going to have time. There's going to be growing pains even through the regular season. It's not like he's solved. Like all the talk about him being developed as a left fielder and spring training, he should be able to figure it out. He came up a center fielder. Why don't you just put him in center field? Well, I don't think he's very good defensively at all. And I want the best outfielders in center field, and so do the Yankees. And I think it's going to take some time in left for Dominguez, who didn't have a great day, but it's one day. And the Yankees won, so no one minds. But this is going to be a regular thing. You're going to see that. That's the only thing is now late in the game when you'd like Dominguez's speed, we're going to see. Now, they would only do it with the lead, I would think. But, you know, I don't know, on days where Dominguez is 0-for-3 in later innings of a tight ball game, a tie game, down a run even, you might see a quick hook from this Yankee team against a young kid who's developing, a young kid who's learning left field, you know, a young kid who hasn't had a ton of experience in the minor leagues, coming off a year pretty much wasted away by injury. I think you could see that probably a lot. Well, I think they like Grisham. Grisham had a good spring offensively, too. He hit a bunch of home runs. He's excellent in the outfield. If you saw that double in the ninth, he actually knew. This is actually smart. I wonder why, when I saw it, I was wondering if more people would do it. He's chasing the ball down in the gap. He knows there's a chance it's going to hit off the wall and maybe take a funny bounce. He actually goes to his hat, takes his hat off, and puts it in his, you know, in his throwing hand, where he has, and then the ball takes a funny bounce and almost gets past him, and he uses his hat to stop the ball instead of just his bare hand. That's actually really funny to me and really smart. The idea that now you kind of give yourself like a second glove to be able to help stop the ball from getting past you. But I've never seen that before. I've never seen it, and he did it before. Obviously, he wouldn't have time to react once the ball hit off the wall to take off the hat and grab it. He's running back, just as he slows up and he knows he's not going to get it, he goes to his hat, takes it off his head, and now he's got a glove on one hand, the hat in the other, to try and make sure it doesn't take a weird pass, weird bounce right past him. I have never seen that before. That's how smart Trent Grisham is. But that defensive alignment, you could see that, and I know I can see it now as we've had conversations about Aaron Boone. I can see it right now. Late in the game, up a run in the eighth inning, they make this defensive alignment switch. Lo and behold, home run, tie game. They get to the bottom of the ninth. Here comes Trent Grisham instead of Jason Dominguez, and everybody's up in arms. This is what's going to happen in close games, late in the game. They are going to go to their best defensive alignment. And I think they're right to do so. I think it's smart. I think eventually maybe Jason will get to a point where they feel more comfortable leaving him out there. But right now, we all know what he is defensively. He's learning the position. They're going to give him run and give him an opportunity early in the games to have good games. You know, he's going to hit a lot. He's going to get a lot of at-bats. But you could see, especially with a 2-3 run lead in the eighth inning, they're going to go to their best defensive lineman. So I thought that's clearly telling to do it day one. Like they did it day one. It's not even thinking about it. Day one, up in the game, defensive alignment change. Out comes Dominguez, in comes Grisham. I think you're going to see a lot of that. I think you're going to see a lot of Grisham in center field this year. And that's part of the reason that they don't want to put Dominguez in center, because anytime they shift things around, whether it's Judge getting a day in at DH, or Bellinger getting a day at DH, or Bellinger getting a day at first because Goldschmidt's getting a day at DH, like, they want to have Dominguez play one position. And if you have Grisham on the team, this isn't, and people, when I say this, people go, okay, great, so we're placating to the backup outfielder, we're placating to the fourth outfielder instead of our future big prospect. It's not placating, it's what's best for the team. They're paying $5 million to Trent Grisham. You know why? Because he's a brilliant defensive center fielder. That's why. He's a gold glove caliber center fielder who's got some pop. He's the fourth outfielder. They're paying him $5 million. Why would you not want to use his best attribute? There are roles on a team. His best role is to be a defensive center fielder. So whenever there's a move around or whatever the case may be, whenever Trent Grisham is in the game, they're going to want to play him in center. Because that's his best position. He's the best center fielder on the team. They want the best defensive player in the most important defensive positions. So Trent Grisham's value is his defense in center field. So if he comes in for anybody and they're going to move the outfield around, or they're going to pinch run and have to put in and Trent Grisham, or whatever the case may be, when Trent Grisham's in, he's playing center. So they don't want to put Dominguez in center and then go, okay, but now we got to move you to left. Okay, now we got to move you to right. Okay, that's Bellinger. Bellinger is the guy you can trust moving all around the outfield. So I think that's part of it too, and I think it all makes sense. And eventually he'll get good enough in left field where they won't feel the need to take him out. But as of right now, Yankees with the lead, they're into the bullpen, seventh, eighth inning. Dominguez gets his third or fourth at bat. The lineup turns over, boom, he's out of the game. And they're better defensively out there. And Trent Grisham, Cody Bellinger in left, and Judge in right is one hell of a defensive outfield. So, like, late in the games, and we saw Jazz play an excellent second base. We saw Volpe have a really good game defensively at short. Like, you look at this team. Wells at catcher, Goldschmidt, Jazz, Volpe, Cabrera, and then late defensively, Bellinger, Trent Grisham, Judge. That's as good a defensive team as the Yankees have had in a long time. And if you look at this roster right now, they're as young, athletic, and good defensively as they've been in a long time. We'll see if that's good enough to get them back into the World Series. But those are facts. They're younger than they've been in a long time. They're more athletic than they've been in a long time. And they're better defensively than they've been in a long time. And maybe they're better at baseball than they've been in a long time. I was just listening to a Joel Sherman podcast. He said it again. It drives me nuts. He was talking about last year's playoffs, and he's like, and if the Yankees were better at baseball, they were in the World Series. Hate that. Okay, let's get to the calls now. Eli and Patterson. What's up, Eli?
Hey, what's up, C-Mac? If you give me a minute over here, talk about horrible roster construction. We spent $800 million on a guy that's wetting his pants, swinging at garbage outside the zone. And now we have to divulge.
Are you guys together right now? I'm not going to hang up on you. Wait, Eli. Let me just have a conversation. I want to ask you a question. I promise you I'm not going to hang up on you. You can say whatever you'd like. I'm just curious if you and Aaron and the other caller are all sitting in a room right now at 3 o'clock in the morning drinking Jack Daniels and calling me up talking about pee-pees and poops. I'm just curious. Are you guys all together?
T-Mac, you're off your rocker.
Okay. I feel like you guys are all in the same room.
So, hold on. Listen to me, C-Mac. Then we got to divert to freaking Heart Attack Holmes and Frankie Montus as our aces. Are you kidding me? That is horrible roster construction. Tell me where I'm going wrong, C-Mac.
No, listen, I've told you I'm concerned about the rotation. I don't know about horrible, but I am concerned about the rotation. I think that's the biggest...
Heart Attack Holmes and Frankie Montus as our aces? What, are you kidding me?
I wouldn't call them your aces. You've got Kodai Senga and you've got
These
Manaya.
These guys are our aces, C-Mac. These guys are our aces. What, are you kidding me?
Again,
Give me a quick shout out to Dave Sims. Great job, Dave Sims, on the broadcast. Great freaking job by Dave Sims.
Yeah, no, Dave Sims. We'll play. You know what? We'll play some calls from Dave. I only heard the one. Really, we played the Volpe home run. I'll play a couple of calls from Dave Sims. It is his first game as a Yankee. I should be playing more. We'll get all of the Dave Sims calls up. We'll play all of them that are in the system. But look, again with the peepees. Juan Soto did not pee-pee in his pants, nor did he poop. And I think we can say pee-pees on the radio. But, like, it was a tough at bat. It was a full count. It was a tough slider. He swung it. Oh, my God, the reaction. And then, again, I'm concerned about the rotation, but Clay Holmes and Frankie Montas are not the aces of the staff. Let's just be fair, all right? They're important key members of the staff. Clay Holmes, a transitioning reliever to starter, is your third or fourth starter. And Frankie Montas, who they ran to give $32, $34 million to over the course of the next 2 years, is an important cog in their rotation. And it sucks that he got hurt, but they are not the aces. They are not the guys at the top of the rotation. That is Kodai Senga and Sean Manaea when Manaea comes back from injury, which should be soon. You want to call that poor roster construction? It's not poor, you know, it's not so much that I view it as poor roster construction. I feel like the Mets, unless they are blown away by a particular pitcher, and I guess we haven't really seen that yet, and you know, maybe the right guy will come up and we'll see how the Mets handle it, but the Mets have a pretty much, as of right now, the first 2 years, what seems to be a way of thinking. They do not want to go into the top edge of the top echelon of the pitching market. Now, they offered Yamamoto $300 million. Now, he's 26. So if a 26-year-old starting pitcher becomes available, sure, they'll throw money at it, no doubt. But typically, these starting pitchers hit the market like everybody else at 30 years old. And so they look at the Yankees giving Max Fried 8 years at 31 or 30 and think it's bad logic. They think it's bad thinking. Pitchers get hurt. They don't want to do that. So when you don't do that, it's one of two things. You have to develop your own pitching, or you find guys who you think you can improve upon. You find diamonds in the rough. And last year they did an incredible job with Severino coming off miserable year with the Yankees, and I saw he pitched well for Oakland. I shouldn't say Oakland anymore. He pitched well for the A's last night, but they did a great job with him. Sean Manaea was relegated to the bullpen in San Diego and San Francisco, if I'm right. He was relegated to the bullpen after having a couple good years with the A's, but they resurrected his career. And Peterson showed up after the hip injury, and he was great. Like, they're looking for those diamonds in the roughs. They're looking for the Cannings of the Griffin Cannings of the world that they think they see something in, they can get the most out of. They see Clay Holmes and they believe they can make him a starter. They must have seen something in Frankie Montas that they believe they can improve upon. Like, they're going to try and do things like that while they develop young pitching, because they don't want to give big time money to aging starting pitchers, because aging starting pitchers get hurt. So, like, on the surface of it, it's not poor construction, because it makes sense. What's poor construction is $36 million to a guy who walked out on opening day with a brace on his arm. Let's be fair about it. So I'm not, I don't know if poor roster construction is the right word. What I would say is if you are chasing championships, if you believe you're the kind of team that can win the World Series and take on the big bad Dodgers, I think, me personally, that the owner should have invested more money into the rotation. I wish that they would have thought of bringing in a Max Fried or a Corbin Burns. It could end up being a disaster. Max Fried might not, you know how I feel about that. Max Fried might get hurt, might not be good. Corbin Burns might get hurt, might not be good. And 2 years from now, we're all going, "Oof! Thank God the Mets didn't invest in those two guys. What a disaster." But you are trying to win a championship, and you're going to rely on Cardiac Clay, since you like the nickname so much, I'll give it to you. And you're going to rely on Frankie Montas, and you're going to rely on Griffin Cannings and Paul Blackburn, who's starting the year on the IL with a knee injury. Like, you have to rely on those guys if you don't want to go spend money at the top of the market. And if the Sprouts of the world and, you know, the farm system isn't ready just yet to produce those pitchers. That's why last year I was so gung-ho on trading for Crochet. Or, you know, because if you have, or even Dylan Cease or Michael King when they were available. Because if you're not going to sign big time free agent starting pitchers, you got to get creative to try and get top of the rotation guys. So if there's a 26 year old rotational piece like Crochet or 27, however old he is, where he's a, you know, bona fide or at least has the ability and showed it last year to be a top of the rotation guy. At 26, 27, you have to go do whatever you can to go get those guys when they pop up, because when he's 30 and a free agent, you don't want to sign him. So I look at this rotation and I say, yeah, it scares me. I don't think this is a rotation good enough to win the World Series. I don't. Not when you're competing against the Braves, the Phillies, and the Dodgers. I look at the rotation and go, this rotation is not good enough. Now, I would have said the same thing last year and I was proven wrong. And there is a trade deadline and there may be pitchers available that maybe the Mets, when presented with the idea of, you know, that close to a championship or a game up in the division and playing really well and Juan Soto's killing it, and they feel like, man, let's be fair, I know I don't like to do this, but we're one really good starting pitcher away from being as good as the Dodgers. And maybe that will entice this owner, this GM, and maybe they'll do something at the deadline. I don't know. But looking at it right now, unless they all, you know, pull aces out of the hat like they did last year with every single starting pitcher, I don't look at this rotation as a rotation good enough to win the World Series. I don't. But when you say poor roster construction, I don't know if I view it that way, because I'd rather put the money in the lineup. I don't think there's an argument to that. I'd rather put the money in the lineup. It's just a matter of, do you pick that one guy or that, you know, those two guys, or do you take a chance on a free agent pitcher who's over 30 because you want that top of the rotation guy, even if it is short-lived, even if it is an injury risk, even if you do regret it 3-4 years down the line? Like, that's part of being big brother, right? That's part of being one of these high profile, big market, high payroll teams. Part of having a high payroll is taking the chance and then being able to eat it, which they've done. They took a chance on Scherzer. Now, it's failed them in the past, so now they're afraid to do it maybe, or, you know, I don't know. But at some point, they're going to have to find the right guy. And until they do, I'm under the impression they don't want to. You can make the argument the right guy just hasn't been there yet. I will tell you, until they do sign a guy, they, to me, have a rule that they won't. And until they do, I'll feel that way. So the rotation is the question for this team, there's no doubt. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Good morning, Chris.
Oh, how good morning, Stu. How are you?
I'm in a lot better mood than when I see Carlos.
That's right. Listen, we all should be in a great mood. Met fans, too. We're back on. We're back on, baby. The season's back. The Mets play again tonight. It's every night, baby. It's one stupid game they lost. The Yankees won one game. They might lose the next two, and suddenly when you call me on Monday, we're going to be in a miserable mood. So who knows?
No, not really. 3 games in, we're talking 60, 70 games in, and we're not doing well. That's a different ball game.
No, I hear you, but I'm just saying. If they lose the next two, we're not going to be happy. But baseball's back. That's the prime argument here.
Yeah, baseball is back. And Juan Soto, he had an off day. Okay, he's going to rake. He's going to do what he does. And the Mets fans should stop it. It's like with the Yankee fans, we do what we do. We complain. When they lose, we complain. When they win, when we win, we don't complain. It's an up and down roller coaster for 6 months, and then we shake it out at the end, and hopefully we're just last team standing.
I think you crystallized it beautifully, I suppose. Don't get hung up on the day-to-day. All that matters is who's standing in the end, and hopefully it's the Yankees. I don't disagree. But it makes for boring shows. Let's go to Nelson in Albany real quick. What's up, Nelson?
Hey, Mac, how you doing?
What's up?
So I just got a rebuttal to all those guys before. Do they not realize that baseball season lasts 6 months? That it's 162 games?
I understand something. Listen, you got to understand something, all right? They're sitting around right now with a bottle of Jack Daniels honey, the three of them sitting in a room somewhere, smoking cigarettes and drinking Jack Daniels, talking about Juan Soto peeing and pooping his pants. I'm telling you, you can't get hung up on it.
They could call him Cardiac Clay. I call him Courageous Clay.
Courageous Clay. I'm 100% with you. Listen, I totally agree with you. It's going to take some time. I know everyone thought he picked it up lickety-split because he had a good spring. It's going to take some time. When he's in a jam, when he's not having his stuff, I talked about this exactly. When Clay Holmes doesn't have his stuff, when he's missing with his sinker or he's not locating, it's hard. Like, he's going to go to what he knows. He's not going to throw a changeup that he hasn't thrown all but of spring training. Like, he's got to have confidence in that pitch to throw it in those moments. It's going to take time for him to adjust from being a reliever. Like, it's going to take time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And all you Yankee fans who say, Soto. We know that one of Soto and Judge, one of them proved themselves in the playoffs last year. I think he's on the Mets right now.
That is true.
So, all you Yankee fans, quiet yourself a little bit. You know, as a Mets fan, there might be some times when we doubt this team later on in the season. After one game, we're good. We're good right now. All right, we got a star-studded lineup. We got great kids. Look at Acuna tonight. Wow, what an at-bat versus Josh Hader over there.
Yeah.
What an at-bat.
Yeah.
You know, he's showing some control. He's showing he can be like his big bro a little bit.
Well, I mean, you see, now this is where we have, you know, you're calling patience. This is ridiculous. It's one game. And then you give me one at-bat, and he's Ronald Acuna. Like, I mean... Do you understand the hypocrisy you just went through there? I will say this, and I think I heard Mendoza say it, and I agree. It wasn't just the at-bat, it was the circumstances of the game. He was the last man to make the roster, right? Against right-handed pitching, which is going to be at least, 75-70% of the time. Beatty's going to take the job for the first month, even though he had this, you know, performance down the stretch last year playing for Lindor. Lindor has come out and quoted as saying he kind of is bored through spring training and bored in the minor leagues. And, you know, that's kind of presumptuous for a young kid who hasn't made his mark on the league to be bored with spring training. But he takes over. He gets the start on opening day because they're facing a lefty. He cost them a run by just throwing a ball away. I mean, he had plenty of time on that double play. There was no reason to rush it. He just made an awful throw and threw it far left of Alonso and cost the Mets a run. Right? He was 0-for in the game prior to that. So he's having a miserable game. He hasn't done anything offensively, and he made a brutal error. It was an unforced error. There was no reason for it. He didn't have to rush, and he made a terrible throw. So that's the kind of game he's sitting on opening day trying to establish himself with this team and hope to get more playing time, as Beatty's probably going to get most of the at-bats against right-handed pitching. This is his time to shine, and that's the kind of game he's having. And in that moment, he falls down 0-2, and then he battles back. And that was a really impressive at-bat. You're 100% right. And when you consider all of the other stuff going on in that game, the way he played earlier in the game, the kind of game he was having, to suddenly turn it on and focus and fall behind quickly 0-2 and battle and battle and battle and battle and work a walk, that was a really impressive at-bat. I have to admit, very impressive at-bat. Now, I don't think it's starting to show that he's his brother. I mean, that's a bit of a stretch. Ronald Acuna is one of the top 10 to 12 players in the league when healthy. Easy. MVP. So, and I'm probably underselling it at 10 to 12. He's just injured so much. But that is a really good at bat and a positive sign. There's no doubt. You want to have that ability. You want to have the ability of not allowing the rest of the game to impact you in the biggest of moments. And there is no doubt in that at bat down 0-2, I did not expect him to draw a walk on a 13-pitch at bat. I didn't see that coming. Very, very impressive at bat from the kid. And we'll see. I still want to see Beatty. And to be totally honest with you, I don't want him on the roster. I'll be honest. I've made it clear. I think the Mets would be better served, and Ronald Acuna. And he would be better served not being on the roster and getting at bats every day in the minor leagues. Because I don't know when he's going to play. I know he played today or yesterday. He's not going to play much. And when McNeil comes back, he's going to play less. So I would rather have him get regular at bats in AAA than just be on this roster. But having said that, he is on the roster. He provides them a bunch of different options offensively, some athleticism, some speed. Obviously, he'll play against left-handed pitching. And he just put forth a really good at-bat against one of the top pitchers in baseball after having a miserable day, and he didn't let that cloud his ability to focus and come through in the biggest moments. So, yeah, that was an impressive at-bat. And they had a couple of them there. I mean, the eighth and ninth inning, they kind of put a rally together in both innings where you felt like maybe they were going to come through and continue the magic of last year. Unfortunately, they just couldn't. All right, I see all you guys lined up on the calls. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with your calls. I do want to play a little bit of Dave Sims to get a feel for what the new Yankee broadcast sounds like, as I didn't hear much. I was at the game yesterday, and what a beautiful day it was. But really, we can have a little fun about Juan Soto. We could talk about Carlos Rodon and Cardiac Clay or Courageous Clay. Ultimately, baseball's back, and we get to react to actual games with actual results on a nightly basis, and we desperately needed it.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 3:35, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. All right, we talked about listening to a little bit of Dave Sims. Obviously, new broadcast. It's going to take time for Yankee fans to get used to it. I think Dave Sims does a great job, so it might not take very long, but John Sterling was, and I know we got somewhat used to it. 2 years ago, we started to mix, you know, John didn't go on every road trip, so we started to hear a couple of different voices, Justin Shackle, and mixing it up with a bunch of different people. Over, you know, some different road trips and stuff 2 years ago. Last year, obviously, decides to step away and most of the season between Emmanuel Babari and Justin Shackle. So we've heard other voices on The Fan, but it's never been, this is the new team. This is the new broadcaster. So, and as much as we are familiar, and many, you know, who go back are very familiar, and this station should be very familiar with Dave Sims, it's still a new thing. And it's still a new voice. And if you've listened to, you know, the Seattle broadcast, you know, you've heard him when the Yankees play Seattle and the Mets play Seattle. So you might know him a little bit, but still, brand new. So I'm going to get to the calls in just 1 second. Hang on. We're going to go through a couple of calls. I just want to hear a little bit of Dave Sims. So let's go through the progression here. We picked out five or six calls just to get a feel for the game on opening day. First game of Dave Sims and Susan Waldman as the new team, as the Yankee broadcast, right here on The Fan.
Peralta from the third base side of the rubber, 2-0. Pitch swung on, high drive, right field. Line drive going back and reaching up. It is gone. A home run for Austin Wells. And what a start to the 2025 season for the New York Yankees. Hey now.
Hey now. That's his thing. That's a good call. I think he's got a really good cadence. I think he's got a really good voice. He gives you a lot of excitement. You really get the feel for that, which is what John was, you know, really all about. John had his moments, right? We all know what John was and what he wasn't. But for me, it was the excitement of the big play, the excitement of the big call, and then a little bit of just the banter and the colorful stories and the whimsical nature of John throughout the game. But the calls, it was about the big one and the excitement. And I think Dave Sims clearly gives you a lot of excitement there. All right, so what do we have next? After the home run, do we have the Volpe home run? All right, let's hear the Volpe home run again. And the beginning is my favorite part.
1-1 pitch, jammed him. J
Jammed
hits
him.
It to right field. That's a good jam shot. It's on the track. Looking up. It's gone. Oh, my goodness. Off the middle of the bat, Anthony Volpe muscles one out. And the Yankees have a 2-0 lead.
All right, so now you might think, and John Sterling might have been criticized for the idea, well, you know, jammed and then out to left. I got to tell you, I thought the same thing watching it in the building. I was there at the game. I thought the same thing. I never thought that was going out. And then I love the, well, that's one hell of a jam shot or whatever he said. That's a good jam shot. Because then he started to see the outfielder start to track the ball. I thought that was a really good call. It gave you an idea of what happened because I'm telling you, I watched it live and you saw it on TV if you weren't at the game. It looked, I thought it didn't have the sound. It didn't have the trajectory. I did not think that ball was getting out. I don't know if the wind was blowing it. I think we have to be fair as Yankee fans. It doesn't, it still counts. It's a run, but that was some jam shot. And I thought the call was fun. I thought the call not only was fun, but it was accurate. I mean, it gave you an idea. He wasn't wrong. He didn't say gone and then it wasn't gone. He didn't say fair and then it was foul. He said jam shot, and it felt like that. I thought he gave a good description of the call. All right, and then we have Carlos Rodon getting out of the fourth inning. Now, you remember the play at first base, unable to make it when Goldschmidt should have just went to the bag. But unable to make it, not only that, kind of tweaks his ankle or, you know, stubs his toe or stubs his foot on first base and falls on his ass. And we're not sure if he's injured. The entire stadium held their collective breath. But he is okay. He comes back out in a little bit of a jam. Runners on. Gets through the fourth inning. Let's hear the getting out of the jam of the fourth inning for Carlos Rodon.
The pitch. Swing on dribble right in front of home plate. Rodon comes down. Gets it. Throws. In time. Got him. Nice play. Anytime you see pitchers run off the mound to get those little dribblers, your heart just comes into your throat. Rodon made the play. That'll do it for Milwaukee in the fourth. When we come back, Bellinger, Goldie, and Chisholm.
Yeah, we don't usually have the next innings lineup still on the call, but that's okay. that was a good one, too, and he's 100% right. I was nervous as hell watching him getting off the mound, especially after I thought he might have been banged up, so that's a good call. What do we have next? And then the fifth inning, and I think this is one of the turning points of the game, because after that fourth inning, it felt like he was lucky to get out of it. He was banged up a little bit after that play. His fastball went down to 92 the rest of that fourth inning. I was nervous, and I remember thinking, and I was talking a little bit to the same guy who was killing Boone the whole game, and we both thought that Rodon might come out of the game there. Opening day, obviously the pitchers are, you know, refreshed, or they haven't thrown much. Day off today. So, like, I just thought it was a prime position. He kind of got banged up. His fastball ticked down. I wouldn't have been surprised if Carlos Rodon came out of the game after the fourth. Instead, Boone sends him back out for the fifth, and he has a dominating fifth inning, striking out the side, including the last strikeout of the inning to get out of the fifth.
Opening day here at the stadium. The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Slider.
Strikes out the side. 1, 2, 3 in the fifth. He's got 7 Ks already through 5 innings.
That was a really impressive fifth inning, I got to tell you. And it's one that I think you can look at with Carlos Rodon. And, you know, struggles when momentum starts to hit the other way. The Yankee offense has been stifled for a couple innings after only hitting the 2 solo home runs in the first and second. They really haven't done anything besides that. He gives up the home run. Then he has that inning where he falls. It just felt like momentum was kind of turning towards Milwaukee a little bit. And then he comes out and dominates the fifth. I really thought that was an important inning. Then he comes back out for the sixth. I think he walked the batter. And then Yelich walks as well. So you got, I believe, 2 runners on, 1 out. And Boone goes to Tim Hill. He gives up a little dribbler, bases loaded, 2 outs. The biggest moment of the game, really. Tim Hill to get out of that with a 1-run lead. Here's how the sixth inning ended with Tim Hill on the mound.
Yankees need an out big time. The 2-2 pitch. Swung on, bouncing ball to Volpe. Steps, throws to Jazz to get the force at second. Tim Hill pitches out of a jam.
Yeah, that was a pretty good call. They did the traditional, the new thing where they ran past. I think what made me confused, or what made a lot of us confused, there was no slide. The runner from first ran through second base in hopes to beating it out. which would allow the run to score and tie the game. If you haven't, you know, that's like a new baseball thing with two outs and a runner on third. The runner from first will try and, you know, obviously the fastest way through the bag is to run through it, like if you're running to first. So even though he would have been out because he kept running and they would eventually been able to throw him out at third, if he beats the throw at second, the runner from third scores. So we've seen that a lot more in the last couple of years. That happened in that situation right there, because I remember my wife was like, why did he keep running? He would have been out. I'm like, he's trying to beat the throw so that the run scores, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so that was a big moment there. What do we have next? Ben, of course, after having a bad start to the game, hits a lazy fly ball and then strikes out with two runners on. Judge comes up with an opportunity to do some damage, and he comes through with one off the bag.
Koenig delivers, pitch swung on, hit down a third baseline, hits the bag! That's a break! Here comes Rice, he's coming around to score! Aaron Judge digging for second, he's in with an RBI double, and the Yankees have a 3-1 lead here in the seventh.
Yeah, that's a huge run, a huge hit, and yeah, they caught a break. I mean, he didn't hit it all that hard, and they were playing no doubles defense. The third baseman would have fielded it. I don't know if he absolutely would have made the play, probably. But hits off the bag, goes over his head, run scores. The Yankees take a 3-1 lead. They make it a 4-run lead on a sacrifice fly. And then despite a shaky ninth with Devin Williams, here's the final call for the first win of the season, the first win for Dave Sims as the new broadcaster of the New York Yankees.
Tall left-hand hitter, 3-2, two out. 2-on, 4-2 Yankees. Williams with the pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Victory for the New York Yankees in the opener. They beat the Milwaukee Brewers by the count of 4-2 as Devin Williams hangs on in the ninth inning. And, man, that was a mystery tour there for a while, but he survives. And the Yankees win this game 4-2, and they get off to a very good start in the 2025 season.
Now, wait a minute. Did I catch a Beatles reference in there? Did he say mystery tour? Oh, man, he's my new guy. A Beatles reference on the final call of his first victory? I love you forever, Dave Sims. Me and you are tight. That was a good final call, and it was. I mean, listen, that was a roller coaster. And let's be honest. Even I'm a positive Yankee fan. Even I was very worried about that ninth inning. Everything lined up to see Devin Williams' first appearance as a New York Yankee opening day against his former team, walking everybody, leadoff single, one off the wall, walk, just a disaster of a first inning. But he was able to get a big strikeout of Chirios, and then obviously the big strikeout of Yelich to end the game there on the final call. But overall, a very good day and a good game, a good day and a good call from Sims. And I don't think it'll take much time. It's just going to take some time. Because John Sterling is a staple. He was there forever. I don't even remember. I'm not sure I listened to the games on the radio before it was the great John Sterling. So it's going to take some time, but he's good. He's been around. We know him, and it shouldn't take that long. Plus, Susan's still there, and the broadcast will always be great here on The Fan. So, looking forward to another 161 just like him. Let's get to the calls here before we get to the top. Tim in Norwalk. What's up, Tim?
How about them Yankees?
How about them Yankees? 162-0. It's possible.
It's possible, just like Mets fans, always thinking that Juan Soto is going to win every game. But, oh, wait. What?
Yeah, they actually lost the opener. Can you believe that?
I can't. You know what bothers me?
It's what's
just
that?
Like Juan Soto like made one of the greatest plays last year on opening day at what is it called now at Houston?
It's not Minute Maid anymore, right? What's the
it's
name?
It's not
of it?
Minute Maid. That's
is it still it. Is it still Enron? I don't think so.
It's not Tropicana Field. It's not Minifield. But he made one of the greatest plays, and he called it, and he did that, and it just made me so happy that this guy struck out looking when he's so cocky. And I love him.
Oh, now all of a sudden, it's very so much like it's very much like Major Leagues. Dave Parkman, the shuffle
like
here makes the girls in Cleveland go wild, and then when he's on the White Sox, everyone want to throw up.
We want Parkman.
We want Parkman.
At the end of the day, I'm with my buddy right now. We're looking. I just got out of work. And I'm telling you right now, the Yankees are the real deal. I don't care.
Okay. I'm just telling you right now, Yankees are the real deal, and I don't care. That's good. I like it. Put that on a pillow. Look, yeah, I hear you. And I have to admit, I was saying this before. I don't know if Fleeks heard me or not, because I'm big on rooting for the Mets. And I got in my car, and I'm listening to the end of the Met game, and I 100%, you can believe me or not, I am 100% rooting for the Mets to win. I hate the Astros. Hate the Astros. I am absolutely pulling for the Mets. I am hoping Nimmo hits a ball in the seats. I'm hoping he rips one down the line. I am absolutely rooting for the Mets, without question. But even I'm not above it. I'm human. And if the Yankees would have lost, maybe I would have felt differently, because and especially if they would have lost the way they would have lost with blowing it in the ninth, I would have wanted misery for everybody. I would have wanted to come in here and see Fliegelman's miserable face. I would not wanted to see Met fans riding on high as Juan Soto hits a big three-run home run. Believe me. But I was rooting for the Mets. Yankees won. I have no reason not to. I hate the Astros. And not only do I hate them, I'm actually competing against them. Every game counts, and we could be, I don't know, it's very likely even that the Yankees and Astros could be competing for a wild card spot. So I'm hoping the Yankees win. As I would think, most Met fans should probably root for the Yankees to beat the Milwaukee Brewers, because you never know, maybe Milwaukee is battling the Mets for a wild card. I think they're far better than Milwaukee, but you never know. They're in a lousy division. They might win a lot of games while the Mets are struggling against the Phillies and the Braves. You never know. I know the Yankees won't impact their standings. So I would think Met fans who are smart are rooting for the New York Yankees to beat any national team that they play, especially a team that they faced in the wild card round last year. So for me, it's easy. I'm rooting for the Yankees, the Mets over the Astros. But having said that, I'm not human. I am human. And in the moment, Juan Soto, to play the hero for the Mets after everything we went through in the offseason, after all the articles and documentaries about why he's a Met and how the process happened and having that thrown in my face constantly and all the Met fans calling me, was I rooting against him getting a hit? I wouldn't say I was actively rooting against it, but when he struck out, I did chuckle. I did. I was, and I didn't mind it. As much as I was rooting for the Mets in that moment, I have to admit, I was kind of like, it could be worse. Oh, hate to see it. A little bit of a hate to see it kind of thing. I'm not above that. But that didn't last very long. And now thinking back on it, I wish the Mets were 1-0 and I wish the Astros were 0-1. I truly do. But in the moment, cut me some slack. I'm only human. Frankie in Mayapack. What's up, Frankie?
Good morning, C-Pack. I hope everything's well with you. Great show as usual.
Oh, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'd just like to make a quick comment before I get to my point. You played those calls from Dave Sims. I tell you, he's going to be just fine.
Oh, absolutely.
He's got energy. He's got the right energy. He makes you feel the game. And you know what? The best announcers are the ones that make you see what's going on. You can visualize it from his voice, what exactly is happening as it's happening. He's going to be just fine.
Oh, there's no doubt. Dave Sims has been doing this a long time. I mean, he'll be more than just fine. He's going to be very good. But it's just, you know, it's unique to the year. We're so used to John Sterling. It's just something that's going to take some time to adjust. But I don't think it'll take very long. I think Dave Sims is an excellent broadcaster.
It's tough to follow a legend, but he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Now, my point, I want to go back to the whole thing with Dominguez and changing everything. Now, I'm not crazy about it. I'm not going to be nuts. I'm not forcibly saying anything either way. But I'm just curious to the fact of, I understand why it's being done. You know, you want your best defense in at the end of the game, protect the lead, so on and so forth. But is there a slight possibility that maybe, just maybe, you might mess with this kid's head a little bit, get into his psyche? And I mean, I've been an athlete my entire life, and every time I stepped on a baseball field, a football field, basketball, I always said to myself, I'm the best player out here.
Right.
Obviously, I wasn't all the time, but I always had the confidence that I was going to make the final shot, or I was going to hit the final double to bring in the runs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, just maybe, pulling him out hurts a little bit?
I don't think so. If it does, it speaks to an issue with him more than it does with the team. They, what are they supposed to do?
Play the lesser player
out there defensively because they don't want to mess with his psyche. He's got to be tough enough to take it. He's understanding. He's learning a new position. He's got to hit. And when they have the lead, he might not be out there. It's all part of it. I mean, just because you believed that you could hit the final shot if they drew it up for somebody else, do you think that, they don't necessarily believe you can't do it? They just think someone else is better for that job in the moment.
Well, we have to hope that he can handle that, because if you remember, when he screwed around a little bit with a guy named Jabba Chamberlain, that didn't work out at all.
No, well, I mean, that's a completely different thing, going back and forth between starting pitcher and bullpen guy and the Jabba rules and everything like that is a little bit different. I mean, come on, he's coming out for defensive purposes. He's going to play left field all the time, and if the game is tied or they're down, they won't do it. But with a lead, they're going to bring in their best defensive positioning. I think it makes sense. Now, there is no question one of these games it will come back to bite them, or at least in the fan base's mind, because we don't know what Dominguez would have done to the plate. But there will be a situation where Trent Grisham is brought in for defensive purposes, the bullpen blows the lead that he was brought in to help protect, and then later in the game he'll come up and strike out in a big spot, and everybody will clamor, why the hell was Jason Dominguez out of this game? It's going to happen. But over the course of the year, you're going to win more games than not, making sure you have the best defense out there. He's got to learn the position. He's learning the position on the fly. He hardly played last year. He's not very good defensively. He hasn't played all that much, believe it or not, when it comes to either COVID or his injuries. He hasn't played all that much in the minor leagues. He's still a very young man, and it's going to take some time, and they're going to let him develop at the major league level. It's part of it. Now, there are some guys who just get the job. Volpe was given shortstop. That's it. He plays every day. He's the shortstop. He won the job in spring training, plain and simple. Anthony Volpe is the shortstop. Dominguez isn't getting the same treatment. Dominguez is not the center fielder. He's the left fielder. And because of his defensive issues, late in the game with a lead, they're going to bring in their best defensive alignment. I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. I think it's the smart thing to do. And I can't worry about necessarily, for Yankee fans, all we care about is winning the game. Every game should come with an importance. The Yankees don't take the importance of winning every single game enough. And now we're going to complain that we're messing with a prospect's head by taking him out in the eighth inning of a game with a lead? Are we trying to win? Because if we're trying to win, it's a smart thing to do. If you're trying to develop Jason Dominguez, okay, could you make an argument it's not? But are we trying to win, or are we trying to develop Jason Dominguez? I think you're trying to do both, but which one do you want more? I want the win. Then I'll worry about Jason Dominguez. 888-808-1019. I see you guys on the line. We'll come back, take more of your calls on this Overreaction Friday. The overreaction to opening day. I love it. Juan Soto is a bum. Just ask Evan Roberts. Wake the hell up, Juan Soto. Devin Williams is a disaster of a closer. Wells is going to hit about 50 or 60 home runs in the leadoff spot. Carlos Rodon is an ace. Clay Holmes stinks. Everything is right with the world for Yankee fans.